June 18th, 2015, it's a Watt from Pedro Show. Show in Pedro, not with Brother Matt, not on the Pleasure Point, not in the Love Grotto. I'm at my old pad, back from tour. I think maybe the second edition says back from tour, because I had a chance, an opportunity, great fortune to have with me via Skype from New Orleans, it's Rob Cambry. Thank you so much.
Wow. Thank you.
Coming aboard here. Watch for Pedro Show.
Yeah.
You didn't know that the software was from Estonia, huh?
Nope. That's totally news to me. I had no idea where it had come from.
Now, you know, on tour, I drove to Estonia, but I didn't get to play there, which really kind of bummed me out because you know whose mother is from Estonia?
Oh, geez. Would it be, maybe Jerry or Carla?
Raymond Pettibone.
Raymond Pettibone. Really? She's Estonian. I should know that. I read
Carla and
I read Carducci's books. I should know that.
Yeah, yeah. Accent, everything.
Yeah.
Carla and Jerzo, they're more South Slavs. They're like Balkan.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
The old Yugoslavia, Croatia. Yeah. I should say that we start off the show off with Naima, alternate version, take one, incomplete, John Coltrane. And then we heard the Dry Bones Trio with Circle Bar 3.
Right. Yeah, that's sort of the third section of an extended suite that took place at the Circle Bar on one sweaty night many years ago, back when I had that particular group with a drummer there from Norway named Andre Lonsnes, and a bass player from Baton Rouge, Louisiana named Bill Hunzinger.
Respect to everybody, because I love it.
Yeah.
Look, let's go back, Rob.
Sure.
I mean, me and you, we met, right? I think it was Baton Rouge.
Yes, it was. When I was in college, you were actually my first major
clubs,
radio interview.
if you understand the old days, especially Baton Rouge, the clubs for the gigs were right by the school.
Right the next block.
Right by the school. The place was called the Bayou, and it was a bitching pad. It ended up burning down. I mean, I still go there. There was Varsity after that, and then Spanish Moon, what I do now. But there was something about the Bayou.
The Bayou had a vibe. The Bayou was really...
I definitely think this was a Bayou gig when we first met. And you got all those bugs you brought. First, we had a spiel, like you had a table out there. Yeah, it was a trip. I get to be on the LSU campus.
Yeah, we walked over from the Bayou. We walked along Chime Street, then onto the campus, and went to the radio station. I was working at the radio station at the time at KLSU, and we did an interview somewhere in one of my shoeboxes. I still have that interview on a cassette tape, and I believe that was the spring of 1989.
So a little while ago.
Oh, a little bit. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Rob, I want to go back even further. I want you to recall, if you can, your first musical recollection.
Wow, the very first one, if I was to go back to really deep childhood.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, I think my mother and two of my aunts took me with them when they went to see Glenn Campbell play at the LSU Assembly Center, which weirdly was just a few hundred feet from where we did that radio interview.
Yeah.
And I think I was about 3 years old.
Damn, you remember back to three.
A little bit. I have vague memories of it, but it was Glenn Campbell.
Okay.
Which is kind of interesting because he's a guitar player
man,
and a very
right.
good one.
Right, right.
So it did leave a really sort of early memory, primal kind of imprint, I think.
Okay. What about records?
Let's see. For records...
What's the first record you bought, Rob?
The first one I maybe bought with my own money, yeah, because there were a few we had around the house that you know, some of my dad's records, like Bobby Darin 45 and stuff like that. But I think the first one I bought...
Back the Knife?
Yeah, no, this was Lonely Road.
Okay. But Bobby Darin, Bobby Darin.
Good song, you know? But I think the first one I maybe bought with my own money might have been a Van Halen 45, I think. Or it could have been a Rick Springfield 45. It was one of those two, I think. That would have been my earliest, maybe when I was 12 or something.
Wasn't there like, they used a little thing from Jamie's Crying? No, that was Who's that dude? He made that the record for Really Kano.
Oh, wait a minute. Well, I know Tone Loca.
That's him.
Rip from James Crying. And Funky Cold Medina. He used
that's it.
You know, the boom, 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 boom. That sort of cha-cha tom roll.
Yeah, that's right.
Or cha-cha-cha. There's a musicologist corrected me once that actually it really is cha-cha-cha.
But it's not really Eddie's brother.
Right.
Okay, let's go back to this.
Sure.
You mean your first record was a 45? It was like me. You bought singles before you bought albums.
Yeah. You bought those first, and then in the 80s, you know, because I was born in 1968, so I sort of come of age in the beginning of the 80s, and the cassette had really taken off big time. So a lot of my friends, if they didn't have older brothers or cousins, they were buying albums on cassettes first. But if you had older cousins,
Rob, I'm thinking, mm-hmm. when you say cassettes, I'm thinking mixtape.
Right, no, but there were in the 80s, a lot of people were buying the albums on cassette, which was kind of a ripoff because, you know, they didn't last very long.
They were bad quality.
Yeah, really poor quality, you know.
Yeah, they didn't want to compete.
So that was big then, but I...
But people wanted them in their cars.
Exactly, yep.
Yeah.
Yep, and you know they get
well,
some exposure.
Well, what about this idea of? When did you find out about underground?
Well, I think the first time I was aware any underground music existed in my own time period.
Because that's why I'm talking about mixtapes. Is it mixtapes your buddies giving you fucking tapes of shit that they know?
Yeah,
and other
that
cats
was a big
don't
part.
Know because it ain't on the radio.
Right. You know,
maybe
you could sort of personalize, instead of being subject to the order of the album, you could make a little personalized statement with that mixtape. But I think in terms of being aware that an underground existed and that it was a real thing, I think for me it was seeing in Cream magazine, I would see these ads for the SST stuff, and it would always be on the sort of the outer edge of the page, you know? It would, and so there'd be the ad.
Yeah,
where
that's where I first saw the Richard Hell. Did you remember the Richard Hell ad?
I vaguely remember that.
I called him.
Mm-hmm.
And I got scared. I hung up. I said,
"No, it
has
a phone number, right?"
Yeah, I called him. I said, "Are you Hell?" And he said, "Yeah." I got scared. I couldn't believe that shit. All I knew was Arena Rock.
Yeah, well, me too in my own way. And, you know, for me, it was the Arena Rock of the early 80s when I came of age was mostly heavy metal. And I was really...
Oh, that's why the Jamie's Crying.
Yeah, oh, I loved it. And, you know, I still have something of a fondness for it because it's such an important part of my, you know, preteen and early teen years. But it also, like what you're talking about with Arena Rock, it was Arena Rock also. So even though you were excited by it and, you know, me and my friends were all playing guitars and stuff, we sort of felt like unless, you know, like the one guy out of our group of guitar playing guys that looked good in the spandex, he was the only one that we thought actually had a shot at being in a band. The rest of us,
let's do it. Let's listen to some more music because I don't understand where this you playing guitar part comes in. We'll talk about that later.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'll get to that. Yeah.
Ah! Thank you. about you, saving my soul. I dream about you every night and day. I see in you a lesbian or a gay. 'Cause I love you, woman, playing soccer. I think about you as a fighter. War against machism. Struggle against sexism. I got this idea. The woman I see is a feminist star, true believer in humankind, the one that shoots behind the line. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, I got shit in my eyes. I'm dreaming,
Your coat is long. I speculate that it keeps you warm. I hope it does. A tiny seed in the right climate will germinate or not.
Watch for Pedro show. At the beginning there, we had Kobo by Rob Camry Miller Nakatani. Yeah, you could tell more about this.
Oh, sure. Just with those guys, Tatsuya Nakatani is an amazing percussionist who's from Japan, but he's lived in the United States for the last 15 or 20 years. And he has his own approach to
what
the
part?
Drums and gongs. And he tours in a way that you would totally approve of. He has all of the drums and gongs in this huge Dodge Sprinter van.
Sprinter!
He,
Sprinter!
He cooks in the van. And he's found a way to tour in the most econo way possible by making all of his own meals. He has a YMCA membership so he can swim and shower in every YMCA. And he tours the U.S. pretty frequently playing some really far-out improvised music.
Where's his home base?
He has a house in Easton, Pennsylvania, which is just about an hour out of New York City.
By Philly?
Not too close to Philly. I think
more north?
I drove through it back when during the Katrina evacuation time, so I kept my geography memory is not so good, but it's a... I don't think it's in the same direction as Philly, so I think it may be on the other end.
Or north, yeah.
Yeah, it could be a bit.
Okay, the Sprinter van. So that's, when Dodge merged with Mercedes, they made a Sprinter kind of van.
Yeah.
You know, the last fucking Econoline rode off the assembly line July 14, 2014.
Oh, my God.
It's over.
Wow.
Anyway, after your, what about Mr. Miller?
Donald Miller is the guitarist for the notorious and amazing band Vorbeto Magus, who have been in existence since the late 1970s, and it's two saxophone players and Donald playing guitar, all of them amplified at crushing volume, doing the most, what did Byron Coley called it, balls on the line improvisation. It's like a sonic monolith, and he's been working on that particular approach to music for over 30 years now, and he lives in New Orleans now, so he's sort of my older brother, running partner, and frequent playing partner.
Bitchin'. Then we had Barbez doing Camti Beshamore. Yeah, this is like old Jewish music that was found in Italy. From a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah.
It's great that these cats found this and fucking got into it. Then we had Windshield Smasher, somebody from Western Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, Mr. Tom with a Longmont. They got an extra long title here. Longmont Potion Castle Remix. Black Moth Super Rainbow.
Oh, yeah.
Then we had Umpio from Soup Bones. Umpio. You gotta get into this cat here, Rob. This cat, his name Fenty. He's from a town called Turku in Finland. And this dude, he just did a fucking 8-9 gig tour of Russia, ended up in Sevastopol. I got to conk for 5 days in his pad.
Wow.
This man is, he's a treasure. He's a treasure. He's brilliant. After that, we had the brand new from Bandidos out of Chicago, Waiting. Then Sakav Daze Jajabam, Bernays Propaganda out of Macedonia, Skopje. Space Pony from Ravenna, Italy, Not Enough. Playing Football, Seb and the Neurotics from Lyon, France. And finally, High Reeve. I think he's an England guy living in Scotland. Mm-hmm. A dead mouse in a fire bucket. And I got a split, what do you call that, 7-inch where you each do a song.
Oh, yeah, the split, yeah.
But it's weird, because who would ask Watt to do two basses after he's done almost 30 years with Dose? Now, look, I want to get back to your journey.
Now, yeah, I will. That's
fun. How did you get on the fucking guitar? How did you get
on? Over the world.
Yeah, but I'm missing Africa. I'm missing India. I'm missing China. I'm missing most of the world. Look, how did you get on the guitar?
Well, let's see. You know, the music that I was listening to when I was, you know, 12, 13 years old, I was really gravitating toward, all this heavy metal stuff. And it wasn't necessarily because I was a rebellious kid or that the images or any of those things appealed to me the way they did for some kids. It really, when I look back on it now, it had something to do with the sound of distorted guitars and something to do with overtones, I think. Because I was just absolutely obsessed with it, and it's not dissimilar to how when I got older I became really obsessed with free jazz saxophone players, which also uses, you know, that sonic language those musicians use also uses overtones and distortion. So I think there's something about that that just vibrated with my DNA because I was obsessed with it. And so I would look at pictures of guitars and people playing guitars, and I had no idea how one worked because, you know, the gear and everything is so accessible to people now and it's so available. But even at that point, you know, in 1983, 1984, you didn't have Guitar Center in every city, and you didn't have, you know, all these websites where kids could learn about the gear. So it was really just like, I didn't know how it worked. I thought that you held your hand in certain positions on the fretboard, and that actually changed the sounds. I didn't realize that corresponded to the pitches of the notes. Seriously, I really, you know, it was that blind of an approach. And so I eventually bugged my parents into getting me a guitar. And around that time, one of my friends in high school had been playing a little longer, and he actually could do a few things. So it's like this was a good friend of mine, so I could pick up some stuff from him. So that was kind of the thing. So this started when I was, I guess, about 14 or so, you know.
Yeah.
But I would say that whole time, it didn't seem like something I'd be allowed to do in public. It always felt like
it
could be the hobby.
Rob, what about the idea of you using it as a means of expression?
Right. That, I would say, was intuitively there all the time, but I just didn't know what to call it. Like, I'll give you an example. This just shows you how instinct plays a big part in this type of stuff. I guess when I first got the guitar, you know, I'm messing around on it through this amp, and one of the strings breaks. I think the G string broke. And I noticed as the G string was breaking, when it hit the pickups, it was like the detuned G string against the pickups had this really weird sound. And so before I broke the string off the bridge, I kept the amplifier on and everything was still loud and turned up. But I found if I pulled on the string, you know, you would get these bizarre sounds with the detuned string and scraping it up against the pickups and everything. I had no idea at that point that there was like an entire school of playing, you know, built around playing the guitar flat and using objects on it and doing what is now called prepared guitar. You know, I didn't know anything about Fred Frith or Keith Rowe or any of these people. But just being like an intuitive kid and just being attracted to sound, you know, I remember messing around with this, and I remember liking it enough to where I took out my cheap little General Electric cassette recorder and taped some of it. And I'm not really sure if the tape still exists anymore. It might have deteriorated by now. But I remember the moment, I can remember it like it was yesterday, because it was this sort of first inkling that this instrument could be maybe used in ways other than it was originally intended, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I didn't know what to call any of this. I didn't have a terminology or a framework.
No, but Rob, you're on a journey of self-discovery.
Right, right.
So I think it's all valid.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a great moment because, you know, there's not many moments you have like that from your, you know, early teen years that you can really remember specifically. Like, you really have a clear, specific recall. And that was one because it was just, it was a sense of just
Rob,
like, wow, what?
Rob, I can testify on that matter.
You know what I mean. It's, yeah, so that was really something. And
you want, you know, we're getting at mm-hmm. the end of the first hour.
And sure.
Now, what I want to get at when we come back is what about playing with other dudes? So think about that.
Yes.
Because you have yet to give me a solo piece of music. You always give me ensembles you play with.
Right.
So I think that was an important element of your, using music as a means of expression.
Yes, and connection to others, too, is part of it, yes.
Right. So, good people, we're at the end of the first hour of the June 18th, 2015 edition of the Walk for Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour two. June 18th, 2015, it's the second hour of the Walk for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Pedro Show. Start off the second hour with the Dry Bones Trio doing Circle Bar 4. Then Can from Germany doing 19th Century Man.
Yeah.
Boris out of Japan doing Quicksilver. Orion Canyon from Insect Surfers. Now, this is U.S., but this man used to be a D.C. guy. Now, he's SoCal. He's great. He's beautiful. And then something brand new from Tollum Wimberly Klein.
Hmm.
And that Klein means nails, right? This is like two guitars. No, it's a guitar, a keyboard, and drum trio. And this tune is called Thinker's Mix. And finally, out of Olympia, Washington, Light and Grace. Rob Cambry, my guest.
Yes, sir.
We just left the part where you fucking find guitar as a source of you being able to express yourself. And now maybe we could talk about you playing with others.
Yeah, that's always the next big step, I think. And you know, like the whole time in high school, you know, with my friends, you know, we all had these aspirations to play metal. But like I said, the guy who still looked good, who was skinny enough to look good in the spandex, was really going to get to play in one of those bands. So it wasn't until a few years after that I, you know, at the Bayou, the club we talked about earlier, Meat Puppets were coming through on a tour, and some friends of mine that I had met in college took me to the gig, and it was a real epiphany. It really opened me up because they were playing this amazing, adventurous rock music, but they didn't have to do any of the meet any of the arena standards, whether it had to do with the clothing or the showmanship or anything, and it felt real and connected, and it felt like something that maybe wasn't so hard to grasp or make a version of one's own. And that was the gig that really made me think I might be able to play with other people and actually eventually do gigs. That's the one that really made it seem to me like this was maybe within grasp. Because prior to that, it just didn't seem like something I would ever do. So that was big. And then over time, it was a matter of just meeting, you know, friends, and some of them played instruments and we'd play together, and then that would either, if it didn't turn into a band, eventually some of it would turn into collaborations. But for me, it was always about connecting with the right drummer. Drummers are so important, I think, and I really needed a good drummer in order to give me the, to help me get over my fear of getting in front of people and playing. And so when the right drummers started coming into my life,
Rob, I don't blame you, because good drummers fucking happen. Can we hear some more beats?
You know, it's really something. It's
can I bring some more beats?
Yeah.
I wanna miss you, Christian. It's gonna I apologize. Jason Moore, Kristen Moore is good with me. To all of you at Oakside, I apologize because it's my communication to you. I'm confident in my intuition. I'm sorry. And I'm in my for any of you hearing this, I'm reporting from New Life Church. This has been my first opportunity to say, I am deeply sorry that I've not changed.
romantic gardeners sizzling the sun. Where do they go after work is done? Do they head over to Kmart or to the local bar? No. They jump on the Concorde and hang out at Le Chat Noir. At Le Chat Noir. At Le Chat Noir. At Le Chat Noir. Those guilty diners still in the sun. Jump on that Concorde.
Songs we just played. Here we go. Live from Pedro Show. Yeah. In the second hour of music, start off with Rough Seven, Preacher by Day. Rough Seven, tell me.
Well, that band is still going. I was asked to join that band in 2009, so that's been going for more than 5 years now. And it's led by Ryan Scully. It's his songs. And he's also in another band that's kind of well-known around the U.S. called the Morning 40 Federation. And this was an outlet for some songs of his that didn't gel as well with the 40s, so he had a whole other set of songs that were coming more out of his personal experiences and had a bit of more of an opening up edge. He wanted a band that could really pop these songs open wide and take them some places. And so that band is still going. We take long breaks from time to time because Scully's got three kids and he's a school teacher by day. But we just did one Monday night, so that's still like an ongoing concern, that band. And I really love it. It's really fun playing with those guys. To tie back to the drummer thing, it's a band with a great drummer. His name's Michael Andrepont. He's Cajun. He's from Eunice, Louisiana. So by having him as our anchor, a lot of things can happen in that band, and I still really enjoy it. It's the closest thing I've ever done to like a traditional rock and roll band, and it's a great thing to get to do from time to time.
Okay, then we heard Surfer Blood with Grand Inquisitor, Ben Lee, I Am What I Am. I think Popeye fucking wrote the first version of that too. Then Chat Noir, I think it means Black Cat, Panorama City, Wrong Side, Time Congelier from San Pedro, but originally Torrance. And finally, Can-Can Heads from Finland, doing Hurrying Kids to Hell. Okay. you want to fucking use guitar as expression, but you also want to connect with other people.
Yes.
Because you respect the traditions, you like the feels, you like the fucking idea of the springboard, the fucking launch pad.
I would say all of those things. Those are all really key to it because I was always drawn to doing somewhat radical music, but even radical music comes out of a tradition and a lineage, and particularly dealing with improvising, it's like we have, you know, we're really on the shoulders of all these giants, and you know, not just the famous ones that we know of like Ornette Coleman and John Coltrane, but there's others that get to be well known but who kept doing or on into their older years, people like Kid Jordan, and I feel like, you know, even doing so-called radical music, you're still part of a lineage. So I like that a lot. I like the connection with other people and feeding off that energy, and I think also it helps for us to get out of our own head a little bit and bounce off someone else's ideas a bit and feel that kind of non-verbal energy connection that you can only get from playing with people. I think that's pretty important, too.
Yeah, but you know what else? I know you're a player and shit, but you also are an organizer. What about this Axe? No, come on, Bryn.
Yeah, Anxious Sound, man. Wow, it's been about 18 years of doing that. And that kind of came out of necessity. That came from, you know, the people that I wanted to see playing. I had to travel to other cities to see them, and it wasn't happening in my own city that much. And so out of that necessity, I figured, well, you know, then it was time for me to start making it happen and making the concerts happen in New Orleans. And by the time I started organizing stuff, I knew a lot of the musicians in this particular scene of music, and it just sort of fell to me to do it. I it wasn't like a big grand plan, but I just remembered this is what happened. I was friends with Adam Lohr, who was working for Homestead Records at the time, during the last days of Homestead Records. And they had put out a couple of William Parker's albums. William Parker, the bass player and composer. And I'd met William a couple times when he had done concerts with Kid Jordan, and I'd met William in New York. And
Thurston first brought me to see William.
There you go. See,
it was the shitting factory on Houston.
Right? Mm-hmm. The old one, yeah. And so Adam, one summer 1997, Adam calls me up and he says, well, you know, he's like, William and his wife Patricia are doing this duo tour and they're just driving through the South in the station wagon, and do you think you might be able to put something together for them in New Orleans? So earlier that year, I'd had this grand idea of trying to do a concert series, and then I got this call, and I took it to mean, well, this is fated, so I need to do this. And so I, you know, got in touch with Zeitgeist Art Center, asked them if they would let us organize something there, and we did, and we had an audience and made an evening of it, and it just kind of grew from there. So after William, I started inviting people like, you know, Peter Brotzman and Billy Bang, Mats Gustafsson, Fred Van Hove. It was a lot of the European players and a lot of the African-American players from the New York scene and some of the up-and-coming players that were coming out of Chicago. That's mostly what it was at the time. Nels was in there, too. Nels I actually met through you at Tipitina's. It might have been 1995 or 96. And I knew who he was for several years before that because I was aware of him on records. And so when he started playing with you, that was like a really nice surprise because I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. My two separate worlds are meeting in this in this situation. And let's see, I think I did present Nels one time back in those days. It was a tour he was doing with Carla where they were playing the Willie Nelson song cycle from Redheaded Stranger.
Yep.
And Nels' trio would play first, and then they would play with Carla doing those songs. And we did that at this pad called the Ark, which was this big open warehouse space that, of course, now houses like a really fancy upscale Italian restaurant, you know, because that neighbor is gentrifying now. But yep, he was in there too.
Yeah,
so,
but
you know,
to end on a happy note, it's the second hour, June 18, 2015, this year, Wild Fever Show. Great guest. Truly. Kicking like Cato. I mean, you remember the fucking, yeah, gentrified.
Yeah, it's happening there. But boy, you mentioned Cato. That was one of our, oh God, one of just our all-time favorites here. One of the greatest characters this town ever produced. Oh, man.
Hold tight for hour three. June 18th, 2015. It's a third hour. What from Pedro Show.
things are sad. Bring things they love is sad. Think tomorrow will come, while today has just gone. Sell our lives by the hour, in the real churning out flour, for inedible bread, buying us shoes made from lead. Born in the chest, happy person buys less unnecessary shit. Time to stop, time to quit. We'll be right back.
hey, you make me feel okay. You know, you make me feel all right.
Hey, you know you make me feel okay. You make me feel all right. And it seems like yesterday that we wouldn't lose that fight. But yet now, here we are. It seems we just don't stand a chance. It's time for we to jump the door. And with one last chance, we'll see you watching you go. Watching you go. Watching you go. Watching you go. Still I'm watching you go. Watching you go. Go!
Watch for Pedro Show. Start the third hour off with Dry Bones Trio doing Circle Bar 5. Part of this cycle, right?
Yeah.
A drummer man from Norway. Good wishes to him.
Yeah.
We got Frederick Kimboom. Where did I meet him? Berlin.
Hmm.
Quit my job. Alligator Suitcase from Atomic Sherpas. Fairlane Swain. Mercurio Ogle. They're from the state of Maine, Portland. Who's that? Captain Neil. That dude took me around out there. He has a bad fucking boat. Yeah, respect. Dark Blue Sea, the No Horns mix from Labor Camp. Labor Camp's got the guitar man from Nip Driver. And John Wilkes Booth with Iraq. Fuck, I don't know where they're from. And Family Room, Shapeshift in New York City now, but that's a cat I met. He was the fourth man in a trio that just hires another man. What do you call that?
Wow. They're usually a trio and they occasionally have the fourth member.
Yeah.
They bring him in as a ringer.
Closer.
Yeah, the ringer, the closer.
I don't know. Anyway, going back to this idea of you doing the gigs.
Yeah, it was just, you know, first out of necessity, just kind of like, you know, just how any of this stuff goes. I really felt like at that time.
Yeah, but at the bottom of it, it's about people, right?
Yeah, yeah, because
that's what I'm hearing you telling me, you know?
Yeah, if I just wanted to hear the music myself, I could have just saved my money and just bought records and gone out of town to go to the occasional concert. So the intention was not just that I wanted to see it, hear it myself in my city. The idea was that I wanted to share it. That's what I think the impulse for a lot of this comes from, is that you do feel the need to share this energy that you're getting from something, and that you don't just want to keep that to yourself. If we only wanted to keep it to ourselves, we wouldn't go out in public and do it, I don't think. You know?
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, you were tripping on what, Van Halen and Iron Maiden.
Right, to go from that to this, yeah, it's a weird...
No, because you know what? No, you know about these Italian guys. Did you see me with the Sonia De Magnaio?
Yeah, with Stefano and Andrea.
Right. And One-Eye Jacks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in fact, your buddy, we cocked at your buddy's pad.
Yep, over at Craig's, right near my house, that's right.
Fucking good people.
Yeah.
Good people. Anyway, yeah, I remember doing a spiel with him for the Watt from Pedro show. And I asked him about his musical journey. And there was a part of it where he talked about Green Day and stuff. And then when we went to play the music, he was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that. But you know what? Why?
That's,
I mean,
funny
the reality
on
the dealio,
like, hey,
is
look,
the dealio.
Nothing to be embarrassed about, you know? Come on.
No, yeah, I know. I'm guilty of much more shameful crimes. More music.
Hey, look out, world, I'm a drum machine gun for you. Shooting a bullet's gonna kill you too. I'm so full in the street.
Why for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. You heard the Portugal, Japan, Have Love, Will Travel. Before that was Round Eye with Streetlight B. I think they're expats. The other guys are from Japan, but these are Shanghai or Beijing. They're foreigners. They're gaijins. Anyway, Brother Steve McKay got to play with them.
Oh, wow.
Cousins from Boston with The Aliens Are Trying to Save Us from Ourselves. And the Father Figures out of Phoenix, Arizona with I'm Not in Love. No Volcano out of Phoenix, Arizona with The Long Game. And Smoking Unit by Revolver Flavor. I don't know where they're from. But Gigi Allen and the Jabbers with One Man Army. That started it all off, and I know he was from New Hampshire. Gigi Allen.
Oh, boy.
You know what? Can I give you one word of wisdom? Maybe that might carry some weight with me.
Sure.
If you go on after Gigi Allen, bring your own mic.
Right. Yeah. Indeed. And maybe even your own mic cables if it's a particularly hot night, huh?
No. Let's get on now with what kind of advice would you give somebody that was getting into music? Because look at your own path.
Yeah.
How would you describe your path?
Well, let's see. In my own case, it's definitely in the best sense. I think I completely followed my instinct and my muse and desire. Like, it can sound kind of cliche to describe it this way. I never described it this way, but one older longtime friend of mine. He told me one time that he thought in many ways what I was doing was consistent with the sort of Joseph Campbell stuff. And I never even really thought of it that way. But it is sort of a thing of just following the thread of whatever gets you excited, you know, consequences be damned, and keep going with it. Because I couldn't have done that if there hadn't been people before me who had also done things this way, such as yourself and many of your colleagues. That was really important. It could be done in a way that was still true to oneself, that, you know, you didn't have to conform to fit into this particular...
Yeah, so what kind of advice would you tell somebody?
Say for somebody who's trying to do it now.
Well, just get into this fucking racket.
Yeah. There's that side of it, and then there's the creative and artistic side of it and the personal side of it, which is those are the areas where all the fun is. And I'm still trying to have fun. I also want to do things that are creative and that have depth and that have intelligence. But above all, I'm trying to enjoy myself too and trying to impart that. So that's what I would really tell somebody who's wanting to do music is that you better really enjoy doing it. If you're doing it because you think you're going to make money or because you're going to get attention and respect or have people fawning over you, then I would say don't do it, because this is a tough time right now to make a living doing music. So if that's your goal, then perhaps there's something else you could be putting your time to better use doing. I think you really need to love it. You really need to love playing. You really need to love the results of what you're working on, whether it's in the studio or on gigs. And you better enjoy the process. And of course, you should try to get paid when you can and get paid fairly. But above all, if you're not enjoying the actual act of it, then believe me, there's plenty of other people who do. So give them some room.
Rob, you got a place on the web where people can go to find out about your gigs that you put on?
I don't have a website at the moment, although I'll probably try and have one up in the next couple of months. I've been getting by without one, which is kind of hilarious. But there is for people that are doing the social media, there is an Anxious Sound Facebook page, and I update that pretty frequently with gigs that I'm either presenting or playing, you know, here in New Orleans and when I go out of town and play gigs in other cities. So that's pretty easy to find. If you run Anxious Sound,
yeah, but you spell it, kind of special.
For Anxious Sound, I spell it normally. You might be thinking of the email address. The email address dates back to when I first got email way back in the 90s, and it's basically, I think it's basically it's the A and then most of the consonants from Anxious Mofo with the vowels taken out.
I always notice that. But for fake look, it's A-N-X-I-O-U-S.
For the Facebook one, it is A-N-X-I-O-U-S and then the word sound. So it's Anxious Sound as two words. Yeah.
Okay. People go there, find out about what Rob's putting on. So thank you so much for being aboard, please.
Oh, man, I appreciate it. This is a real pleasure. I'm very flattered that you asked, man. My pleasure.
No, big, big respect. It's been the June 18th, 2015 edition of the Lock Pedro Show. Special guest, Rob Cambry. Thank you so much. Keep on keeping on, Rob. People,
you
keep
too.
Your powder dry.